Next up, we talk paranormal Texas. That's right. And some other spooky things. Unexplained Texas, too. Next, with Tui Schneider on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you with Tui Schneider, travel writer, photographer, musician, speaker who specializes in haunted and downright bizarre destinations in good old Texas. And as she puts it, I used to write fiction, but then I moved to Texas. Schneider is currently writing a field guide to historic cemetery symbols as well, and a book on the 1897 UFO crash in Aurora, Texas. That was an incredible story. Jim Mars has talked about that, where they found the body of the alien, buried it, and it's gone somewhere. Hey, Tui, welcome.
Well, hi there, George.
We got lots of stuff to talk with you about. My gosh.
We have a lot to talk about. And to top it off, I am calling in from Miss Molly's, which is
haunted place.
It is so haunted here that visits here are included in the curriculum for the local university. Yeah.
I love it. You'll have to tell us a little bit later what happened there a long time ago. What kind of music do you play as a musician?
Well, I call it maybe dream pop, or sometimes some people use the term, some of it's a little low. I guess synth folk even.
Yeah.
I play a few different instruments, and I like to harmonize, and even when I try to be angsty, it usually comes out a little dreamy.
I love it. What kind of instruments do you play?
I play clarinet and flute and bass clarinet, which I really enjoy.
Good for you.
And piano. So
you're multi-talented. Favorite song of all time? What is it?
Oh, that's impossible.
It is.
No, I love the song Stardust. That is a song that I really love.
Yeah. We play a little Willie Nelson when he sings that.
Oh, he does a good version, yes.
Yeah, he does.
That's one of those songs people can interpret a lot of different ways, and I like the lyrics aren't too obvious. You can go, you don't know what exactly. It can mean different things for different people.
How did you get involved writing about the mysteries and the paranormal?
Well, I moved to Texas in 2009, and I was just writing straightforward articles for, travel magazines. And, since I was in Texas, I started writing about Texas, and I'd heard a lot about
it. It's a great state. I love Dallas. It's a great city, great state.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah, this whole area, the whole North Texas area. In fact, my books, I should add, I really haven't gotten too much out of the Dallas area. It's a bit like a tidal pool. You think, I will move on to the next tidal pool, but you keep looking and you keep seeing more creatures in there. And that's kind of what it's like around here. In Dallas, you think, the Dallas area, okay, now I'll move on. But it's still a pretty big area because Texas is big.
Sure.
But I haven't written about South Texas yet or, the deep Texas. I mean, I would like to, but I just keep discovering more and more strange things here.
How far back does some of these strange things go? I mean, way, way back?
Well, yeah, and one that I haven't even written about yet is it's called the Spider Rock Treasures, so I can't say too much about it, but there are some, that goes back to the 1700s, I think. Most of the things I write about are maybe go back to maybe the 1880s, frontier times is when the weirdness of the frontier times.
Are they mostly ghostly stories?
Well, in paranormal Texas, that whole book, that's just a travel guide to actual haunted places.
Like Molly's.
Yeah, like Miss Molly's.
Yeah.
So, but Unexpected Texas, kind of what got me writing that was, like when I first got here, I was writing about, I guess, Expected Texas. And I would try to, then I started bumping into these weird stories, like, over in Eastland County, their courthouse, they have an embalmed lizard on display. It's on public display when you walk in and out of the courthouse. It's in a velvet-lined casket.
Why?
Well, they call it Old Rip, and it's a strange tale where they were going to demolish their courthouse and put up a new one. Well, they were actually building the first one. I think this is in 1897. And the county clerk, on his way to the christening or what you call the ceremony where they're sealing up the cornerstone, he'd heard the old wives' tale that if you put a horny toad, which is actually a lizard, but here in Texas people just call it a horny toad, And it's a lizard that looks a bit frog-like because it's kind of got a puffy belly. So you, from a distance, you might think it's a frog. So anyway, he had he took his son's pet horny toad and he put it in, sealed it in the cornerstone of the Eastland County Courthouse.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and it was his kid's pet. I mean, but he had heard the wives tale that, oh, you know, those things can live for 100 years without eating or drinking. And so
not true, I guess.
Well, maybe, George, because here's what happened. 31 years later, his little 4-year-old son had grown up and still lived in Eastland, and I don't know if he was bearing a grudge over the whole horny toad incident, but they decided to, you know, open up that cornerstone, and he remembered that horny toad was in there. So
don't tell me he jumped out.
Well, yes, there was a huge crowd there. Word kind of spread. There was like 2,000 people there, and it didn't really jump out. But they had a scientist there from TCU, I believe, and they had a minister there just to make sure. And they got the little horny toad out, and their little horns, they're like little protuberances on them.
Yeah,
looked really worn down.
I would think so.
Mm-hmm. But here's what's interesting.
31 years later, you say.
Yeah, and it came back to life.
No.
It did. It did. And they said that its eyes and mouth were sealed shut, which is what they do when they hibernate. So you can't really fake that.
31 years?
Yeah, 31 years later, the poor little guy. So he became incredibly famous, and he traveled the country, he lived a good life, and then he died of pneumonia a little while later, but it's a bit of a
go figure.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a true story?
It is. It's a true story. In fact, a lot of people think...
I just heard a ghost opening a door. In your
room. Yeah. I think a little WD-40 could be helpful around here just to
careful.
Be, you know, keep up.
It's old.
It is.
But it is. But the toad story is real.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I go into more detail in my book, of course. But that is... It's a true story. So, as you can see, I started to get snagged on what? There's another ghost.
It is. It sounds like you're starting Halloween a yeah. little sooner than we are.
It reminds me of that old radio show, The Shadow. What evil lurks in the hearts of men.
The Shadow Knows.
Freaking, yes, The Shadow Knows. But, well, like over in Grand Saline, they have a museum that's housed in a building made entirely out of salt, which... You know, that's strange.
That is strange.
And here in Fort Worth, we have a replica of Da Vinci's Last Supper, and it's made from life-sized wax figurines. And then, of course, over in Glen Rose, Texas, you can actually walk around town, and you can see dinosaur footprints, and they're from a dinosaur, a big brontosaurus-like creature called Plexosaurus jonesi.
In Texas?
In Texas.
Must have been 60 million years old.
It's very old, but here's the thing. Not only is it our state dinosaur, but it's arguably, it could possibly be the largest creature to have ever walked the earth. So, you know, everything's bigger in Texas.
All right, well, I'm going to ask you 1,000 stories and questions.
Oh, okay.
Or stories. You have one about Steven Spielberg. Tell me about that.
I do. Yes, okay. Well, in various interviews, Steven Spielberg has mentioned that in his lifetime, he actually spent time in 2 haunted hotels. And one is the famous, you know, the Stanley Hotel in Colorado.
Yep, that is big.
Yeah, that's on my paranormal bucket list. I really want to go there. And I'm sure lots of listeners know that's the hotel that Stephen King based his book.
Oh, yeah, my daughter went there. She loved it.
She did? Oh, yeah, I would like to go. I know a few people have been there. And then Spielberg has also said the other hotel that he spent time in, that he didn't spend the whole night, but it was in the town of Jefferson, Texas. That's in East Texas, and where actually there are a lot of Bigfoot sightings, I should say. Although they call it Wood Ape over there. Anyway, Steven Spielberg stayed in the Excelsior House. And the Excelsior House, it's actually the oldest hotel in East Texas. It's been around since the 1850s. And so it's got a lot of history, and a lot of famous people have stayed there, like Ulysses S. Grant stayed there.
Huh.
Yeah, and Steven Spielberg kind of stayed there, except the night that he was there, he did not make it all the way through.
What do you mean? What happened to him?
Well, it was, I think it was around 1970, well, it was the early 70s. And he and his crew, they were out, you know, scouting for They were the movie Sugarland Express. And so they were scouting locations, and he had a long day, and the crew came back to the Excelsior house, and Stephen walked into his room and just kind of, you know, as you do when you're tired, you sort of toss your stuff around. So he was tossing his clothes
and
off.
Jump
and
on the bed. You fall in the bed.
Exactly. And he tossed his briefcase onto a chair, and the briefcase was immediately flung back at him. And he
you mean like something threw it back at him?
Yeah, but it was just enough to make him go, did that really happen? Or was it just maybe some sort of, I don't know, freak thing with the pillow being a little cushiony? He didn't know what to make of it. So he just thought, I'm tired, whatever, you know, shrugged it off, he went to bed. But then he had just drifted off to bed, I mean, off to sleep, and when he felt something next to him, and he opened his eyes, and he saw a little boy standing by the bed, and he said, you know, would you like some breakfast, sir, or something along those lines. And that is when he, you know, flipped the lights on, grabbed everything, grabbed his crew, and got went to another.
I would guess so. Did that inspired him, though, for the movie Poltergeist, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Many people claim that that must have been the incident that helped, because that was his very next movie, was Poltergeist. So, and if anyone wants to know, he stayed in the Jay Gould room, which everybody that I've talked to who's like a paranormal investigator goes, well, no wonder. That is the most, you know, that is the most haunted room in that hotel. So,
did you come across anything in San Antonio, you know, for the Alamo?
You know, that building I was talking about that's made of salt, it was actually meant to be a replica of the Alamo.
Really?
Yeah, for the World's Fair, I think it was 1936. You know, over in Dallas, they have that, they still have, it's called Fair Park, and it's the remnants from that World's Fair. It's, I think, the largest Art Deco, still standing, like, all in one area that you can go in and see. But, yeah, they did. They made that an Alamo, a version of the Alamo out of salt. Of course, you know, we get some pretty heavy rains here in Texas and hail, and so
there was a drought a few years ago. So
oh, there sure was.
We need it now with California. We need the rain.
No, we sure do. Yeah, we need the rain in just all the right places, don't we?
At the right time.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get the name Dewey?
Oh, goodness. Well, it's just a nickname that stuck. So it's a type of bird, it's an airline, and it's also a beer down in New Zealand. So I think they ought to have me down.
And so you use that most of the time, huh?
Yeah, I do. It's my legal name.
Is it? Oh, you switched it. Okay.
Yeah.
you read a little bit about Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, my jury is out that he was a participant in the Kennedy assassination.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was what he said he was, a patsy.
Yeah.
He was there, but it was a setup, and this was a conspiracy. It was planned, and there were probably three shooters there. But you say that his grave is out there somewhere.
Yeah.
What's that story?
Well, his grave, first of all, they wouldn't bury him in Dallas. You know, they were worried about that. They sneakily bought a plot under an assumed name in Fort Worth.
Who's they, the family?
You know, I don't think it was the family even. They were pretty much out of money. I'm not so sure. I'm not an expert on that part of it. But, and I'm, you know, oh, I don't know. I'm not sure. But I do know that no one showed up. I mean, not enough people showed up to be pallbearers, so that actually some
reporters. Reporters had to be the pallbearers.
They did. And I found actual newspaper articles saying that. I wanted to make sure it wasn't just lore. But, yeah, so his grave is very modest. It's just, his marker is just, it looks like a brick. It's flush with the ground, and all it says is Oswald. And it's a little hard to find, unless you know where you're going. And then, of course, like anything, once you know where you're going, it's really easy to find. But what I thought was interesting when I went there is that right next to it there's a marker that looks exactly like it, the same style, flush to the ground, and it says Nick Beef on it. And I thought that was really weird because I'd never heard of, you know, I mean, I'm not an expert on the JFK assassination and everything surrounding it, but I know a bit, and I certainly had never heard of someone named Nick Beef. So I started asking around, and then I started trying to do some research, and I found that other people were pretty confused and not really sure who this Nick Beef was either. So And the main rumor that I kept hearing was that they had put two reporters, or either historians, had bought that Nick Beef marker and put it next to Oswald's grave to make it easier to find. But then that didn't make sense, because I found out that the cemetery where Oswald is buried, they don't tell you where anybody is buried. You just have to know. So it was just really up in the air until 2013, finally, the New York Times, they found the mysterious Nick Beef. And it turns out the guy is alive and well. And here I thought, you know, I was looking obituary.
He was a writer, wasn't he?
Yes. He calls himself, I think it's kind of a funny, quirky title. He calls himself a non-performing performance artist.
Is he still alive today?
He is. He's alive and well. And he gave an interview with the New York Times. And so they asked him, why did you buy this? You know, why did you have this?
Next to Oswald.
Yes. And the whole thing was that he just, I mean, like so many people, of course, the assassination of JFK was a very big deal in his life, and he actually lived here in Fort Worth, and he remembered, like, seeing the president and the first lady when they arrived at the airport, and so, you know, he was a little kid, but that was a big, big memory for him. And then after the assassination, for some reason throughout his childhood, he and his mom, it was like one of their routines to just kind of swing by and stop by Oswald's grave, and he doesn't really know why they did it. It was just one of those rituals of childhood. So when he found out that the plot next to Oswald was empty, he just, on an impulse, he bought it for himself. He didn't know why.
Huh. So yeah. You think when he dies, he's going to be buried there?
Well, here's the funny thing. No, he doesn't plan to be buried there. He plans to be cremated. So, and isn't that weird? And he used that stage name because he didn't want anyone to be able to associate Nick Beef with him and his family. So it's just
how
a funny,
weird,
quirky story.
It really is bizarre.
Now, what I like.
You're going to be writing a book, are you not, then, on that 1897 UFO crash in Aurora, Texas?
Yes. I included a chapter about it in my Unexpected Texas, and I live really close to that cemetery, and I talk to people who, you know, have their opinions about it.
That's a great, great case.
Oh, it sure is. And I've got to say, it's one of those tales that at the beginning I thought, oh, you know, no way. But then the more I looked into it, wow. And you mentioned Jim Mars, and yeah, I'll get to him too. I mean, it just becomes more and more interesting. Because, and so I even though I wrote about it in that one book, it's like sometimes I just can't keep from researching something and researching it. It just, that's one that, like you said, is a great story. Yep. So I just keep looking into it and all the stuff surrounding it. Because from 1896 to 1897.
Well, it's the Roswell of Texas, isn't it?
Sure,
that
is.
Case.
It is. But I mean, I didn't realize, because I was trying to look up articles specifically about Aurora, and I started finding all these other cigar-shaped airship sightings. And then I realized and read other places that, like, from 1896 to 1897, there were lots of UFO sightings, these cigar-shaped airships.
Oh, yeah, many.
All
many,
over.
Many, 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 many.
Yeah, and I thought, really? So then I just kept digging. I mean, they were, I'd find them in New York and San Francisco, and I was like, wow. But then in the spring of 1897, like here in North Texas, we got so many UFO sightings, cigar-shaped ones. There were hundreds of UFO sightings in the Dallas-Fort Worth region over, it was about a six-week period. And most of the witnesses were seeing a similar shaped objects. And, of course, there were some pranksters. There were some guys in Plano who, they took a turkey, you know, and they tied some flaming twine around his leg and tried to make it fly. And then I think it flew up onto the schoolhouse and might have caught the roof on fire. But, you know, you can weed that kind of thing out, right?
You sure can. Hey, stay with us, Tui. We're going to come back and talk more about this Roswell case of Texas and some other cases, of course. How about of John Wilkes Booth haunting in the area of Texas. We'll talk about that as well. So much more on Coast to Coast AM. One of those nights. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast. Tui Snyder with us, of course, and we're going to get right back into some of these incredible stories. Tui, back to the Roswell of Texas, that crash, of course, of 1897. What happened to the occupant of that crashed vehicle?
Yeah, we were just, when we went to the break, we were just getting to the juicy part
Yes.
because, yeah, it was April 17th, 1897, and witnesses saw a cigar-shaped object crash into buildings in Aurora, and it spread debris all over several acres. And you mentioned a little creature inside. They found a burned-up body in there, and the local newspaper described it as being a creature that was, quote unquote, not of this world inside. There was also some claims that maybe a document with some strange hieroglyphics was found on the body of the creature, but I haven't been able to find too much about that. But the main thing is, the crash occurred on a Saturday, and the next day was Easter, and they just buried the little him or her, whatever it was. And that's where a lot of people just go turn their noses up and say, well, obviously the whole thing is a hoax, because nowadays we would dissect something like that, right? It would we would
You think, yeah.
yeah but as I read different newspaper articles, it from that time and reports written back then, it really gives you a flavor for how the people were feeling. And as I said, there were a lot of UFO sightings at that time, and people were scared. And there are some articles where people, they thought this was a sign of the apocalypse. I mean, it was 1897, so a century is just right around the corner. And a lot of times at the turn of a century, doesn't matter which one, people start to think the world's going to end. And so, especially in poor Aurora, they had been a thriving town. They had, in the 1860s, there had been like 3,000 people living there. They were really doing well. But then they had a super bad, major streak of bad luck. A spotted fever epidemic came to town, and it killed hundreds of residents. And others were left blinded or otherwise infirm from that. The cotton crop failed. A fire ripped through town. So, oh, great, now a space alien.
Yeah, whatever we need.
We really, God hates us, let's just bury him and move on. So that kind of made sense, and the town just really died out after that. I think there's only about 300 and something people living there now, and there's no town square or court
And the
house or anything.
graveyard, that grave spot is gone, right?
Yeah, now that whole thing is very strange. So, and I wasn't able to find out, what they did as far as like at the actual funeral. I'm really curious what sort of, I don't know what they did, but the original headstone, it showed a little carved cigar-shaped object with portholes on the side. And then that one got stolen, but it was quite a bit later. Well, I guess I'm jumping ahead of myself because I'm curious. I started thinking, like, why were people seeing all these airships around? And
Yeah, they were everywhere.
they were. And the first official dirigible or airship that we actually had didn't take flight till 1904 from on the official records. But then when I was digging around a little more, there are rumors that some inventor might have built an airship that was used during the Civil War for reconnaissance. I think by the Union soldiers to spy on the Confederates. So there might have been, I'm wondering if maybe some of these were secret test flights that people were
Well,
seeing.
that could have been too. You never know. I mean, now I think some UFOs that people thought they were seeing a few years ago might be drones of today.
Yeah. So you don't know. I mean, it still fits the title because it's an unidentified flying object. It just, maybe they're not always, extraterrestrial. I don't know. So, but the thing is, after that, crashed, buried, it, the town of Aurora, really nothing happened for a long time until about the early 70s. And a newspaper in Dallas ran a series of articles about the incident. And I guess you could say it went viral because UFO researchers, they just flocked to the crash site and to the little graveyard where, and at that time, that little headstone was still there. And so many UFO researchers and, just curiosity seekers were milling around that the local law enforcement, they started guarding that cemetery and that the little space alien grave 24 hours a day.
We're with Tui Snyder, by the way, talking about her latest work, Paranormal Texas. Are you related at all to the old great baseball player Duke Snyder?
No, my maiden name's Cameron, so So no.
Okay.
I'll have to go look him up now. You've got me
Oh,
curious.
yeah, he was a great ball player in his day. He sure
Oh,
was.
hey.
All right, tell us a little bit about Miss Molly's Hotel. What's going on? It used to be an old bordello, wasn't it?
It did. It was a bordello, and but it was an upscale bordello. So this is more like politicians and, upscale. Nothing sleazy here. And where I'm currently sitting, I don't know what they call this. I guess the parlor. This is the room where the ladies of the evening would have sat and awaited. And it's flanked by eight different rooms. And I'm staying in the cattleman's room, which I've been told there's such a variety of activity here, and it includes full body apparitions. So I keep glancing around thinking, I would like to see the cowboy Jake, because he's apparently a tall, 6 foot 4 cowboy, and people will see him and actually think that there's a man up here, and then they will have to look around and so, but if you hear me scream, then you'll know.
Oh yeah, but it is truly haunted, isn't it?
It is, and like I said, they do parapsychology courses here. The local university does, so it's one of
That's
the
good.
places that people want to test their equipment, because they know that they're going to get things.
The ghost of John Wilkes Booth, the
Oh yeah,
assassin of President Abraham Lincoln.
yes.
What's going on there with that?
Oh boy, this is another one of those stories. You know how I said I used to write fiction, but then I moved to Texas. This is another one of those stories. I just thought it was ridiculous at first, but kind of like that Aurora UFO, the more I looked into it, the more I realized, well, there's something going on. In fact, I mean, there have been TV shows like Unsolved Mysteries in 2020. They've actually looked into the whole John Wilkes Booth issue in Granbury, Texas. So I thought it was just going to be a tall tale, but now the jury's out. Of course, according to the history books, Booth was killed in April of 1865. Now he was allegedly hiding out in a barn with some companion when he was discovered, but he refused to come out of the barn. And even though they were supposed to take him alive, he was supposed to be captured alive, they just went ahead and burned the barn down with him in it. And it's a long time ago, so forensics weren't there wasn't much to him, and they just thought, okay, Wilkes is dead, the end. So a few years after that, a man who called himself John St. Helens moved to the town of Granbury, Texas. And he started tending bar, but and he was, seemed like a nice enough guy, but he had some really interesting quirks. People noticed that he would get really skittish around law enforcement, like he just wouldn't want them to be seen. But I mean, I'm sure a lot of people in the frontier days were skittish about, around law enforcement. But it gets better because, like John Wilkes Booth, Helen walked with a limp. He was a really accomplished actor, and he could just quote Shakespeare at the drop of a hat. He was quite fond of doing so, apparently. And, John Wilkes Booth and his brother were both highly renowned Shakespearean actors of their day. So that's like, makes you go wonder. Now, another quirk that he had is that 364 days a year, he wouldn't touch a drop of booze. But,
But that one day, the leap
yeah.
year.
Every April 14th, which is the anniversary of the assassination of Abraham Lincoln,
Interesting.
he would just drink himself into a stupor. And no one really made anything of it. They were like, yeah, just April 14th. He just drinks himself silly that one particular day. So, in any case, people around town, they liked him. He had friends. But then in 1872, he got really sick, and he thought he was on his deathbed. So he called his friends to his bedside, and he confessed to killing President Lincoln.
Wow.
Yeah. And you think, I'm sure he felt, wow, I'm telling them something big. And they were like, oh yeah, whatever. They didn't believe him. They just thought, you're having a fever delusion, whatever, guy,
Great story.
Oh, but then he got better. He healed. He'd gotten
Oh
over it.
boy, and wishes he didn't say anything.
No, he split town. Yeah, he did. He split town the next day, and they never saw him again. So then his friends thought, maybe there's something to this. And so they went and they followed up on something he told them. He told them where he had hidden the gun wrapped in newspapers, and I think they were bloody newspapers that had articles about Lincoln's assassination. And they did find it. So it is just a very strange story. And people think that he's one of those ghosts. Some ghosts, just stick in one spot. This one just haunts the whole town square, from what I've been able to tell.
So, Tui, let's talk a little bit about one of your new books, which is called The Lynching of the Santa Claus Bank Robber.
Oh, sure.
Tell me about that. Was this somebody dressed up like Santa Claus?
It sure was. Yes.
How would I know that?
Yes, I know. And spoiler alert, he gets lynched. Well, now, one of the biggest manhunts in Texas state history was actually for that particular Santa Claus. And that's another, you know, this is another reason, it's another crazy tale. The gist of it is that in December in 1927, there was a gang of bandits, and they robbed the bank with a leader dressed as Santa Claus. And this fella, Marshall Ratliff was his name, he'd already gone to jail for robbing another bank, so he figured, maybe if I dress like Santa, no one will notice. And, you know, that actually kind of worked at first, but then everything went downhill. I mean, like I said, he gets lynched in the end, but there are a whole bunch of bizarre events that lead up to this. I mean, it's like a really dark comedy.
Did he deserve getting lynched?
You know, he really kind of did. Once you see everything he did, by the time it gets to that point, I mean, not that really anyone...
Not a good guy.
Deserves, yeah, he really went bad. He ended up doing some bad things.
Santa, there. How could Santa do that to us? Mm-hmm. Now, of all the stories you've covered so far, which is the one that scares you the most?
Oh, the ones I've covered so far. You know, it's when I read an actual ghost, a haunted place or a ghost story, those don't scare me. I think I'm more scared of the living. There is actually in that same cemetery that I mentioned, where the Aurora space alien grave is.
Mm-hmm.
And I did get actually on Coast to Coast, you guys posted one of my photos that I took. There was a second one that went, a second headstone.
We jump at this stuff fast.
Huh?
We put these things on quickly.
Oh, yeah. Well, and anyway, but it's since been stolen, sadly. But in that same cemetery, there is a grave for this serial killer that people say that if you go there, you'll feel sick to your stomach, or you'll, you know. And when I was writing and researching his life, it was just so, you know, so icky because he just did horrible things, and so that scared me more than anything. The ghost stories don't scare me so much because most of the time the ghosts aren't really trying to scare people. And in fact, sometimes the ghosts themselves are scared. That was a big surprise for me.
Well, do you specialize in haunted stories, or is that just part of what you do?
Oh, that's just part of it. I really just specialize in offbeat and overlooked things.
The weird things.
Yeah, yeah. And the things that I think people...
Like the 31-year-old frog.
Yeah, the things that are right here that people who live in Eastland may drive right by it all the time, and it's a fantastic story. They might miss out on it. And I think there are a lot of things around us. If you just keep your eyes open and look at what's really there, then, you know, there's no reason to be bored.
What's been one of the most bizarre stories? The frog story?
The frog story is certainly bizarre. It's hard to say. You know, that one really is, because I didn't think I was going to believe anything of it. I mean, that happens a lot of the stories that I start researching. I think, like I said, with the Aurora alien, I thought, there's going to be nothing to this. I'll be done with it.
Oh, that's a great story.
Yeah.
I know Jim Mars loves that story.
Yeah. I hope to get a chance to talk to him about it.
Have you ever met him?
No, we were both at a paranormal conference together, and it was just too busy. I didn't get a chance to talk to him, and I was a little starstruck. I kept wanting to go talk to him.
No, he's a very down-to-earth person. You'll like him.
Well, I will next time.
How many haunted places are there when you put together Paranormal Texas? I mean, how many places are we talking about?
That's a good question. I don't know if I've really counted them up. Maybe 40 or so?
That many?
Oh, and there are more. You know, I didn't put... One of my criteria for the book was I only wanted to include places that it would be polite to visit. I wanted it to all be places you could actually visit, so if a place was no longer open to the public, I didn't include it. Or if it was like a haunted church or a daycare or something, or, you know, convalescent center, I didn't want people barging in during someone's, you know, nap time going, oh, we're going to do a ghost hunting. So I left out a lot of places, actually. I kind of had a little, you know, I wanted them to all be places that you could go visit with your family that had interesting history with them. And if you were lucky, maybe you would see a ghost along the way. In fact, I kind of like it when I felt like I'd succeeded when I got an email from a woman who said that she was able to get her kids interested in history because she used my book, Paranormal Texas, to plan some day trips. And the kids went because they were like, oh, maybe there'll be ghosts. You know, I think it's a good way, ghost stories are a good way to connect with your regional history.
What is it about ghost stories that just enthrall people?
You know, especially here in Texas, they don't, I notice pretty much everyone you talk to will have a ghost story. I think it's just, it does connect you to your history, and it gives you a little chance to think about what things were like right where you are, but at a different time. And so the stories are intriguing in that for that reason. That's what draws you in. I find that Texans don't really like to talk about UFOs much. They'll just be like, they'll go on and on about, oh, this ghost story, that ghost story, and that's just totally fine. But as soon as you mention a UFO, they're like, ah, no, that's ridiculous. And I'm like, okay, you were just telling me about, you know, John Wilkes Booth haunting your your store, but suddenly I'm the weird one. Okay.
Tui Snyder with us, of course, and we're going to take phone calls, your haunted stories. You can always tell, Tui, when we're getting close to Halloween. These things happen all the time. In the stories you've covered, mm-hmm. are there any that are so dangerously scary? Most of them sound kind of interesting or weird, but is there anything that could be dangerous to somebody?
You know, I think the real danger just happens from the places themselves, not any entities there. I just think that when you're walking around, especially if you're doing an after dark kind of investigation, you have to be careful. A lot of these places are not very well maintained, and you might be looking up and step and stick your foot through something. So I think that's the real danger. I didn't really come across any, you know, I know other people who say they've had some bad experiences. But, yeah, I didn't feel like any of these places were menacing.
Are you sure?
Well, there are a few places I've been warned about. I had a strange experience over at the Crazy Water Hotel in Mineral Wells. Have you been there?
No, I haven't been there. What happened?
Well, I was with a part of an investigation. It was with Greg Stevens and his group, their Texas research and investigation of the paranormal. And the Crazy Water Hotel is built right on top of one of the mineral wells in the town of Mineral Wells, so it comes by its name, honestly. And a lot of people, that is just such a haunted town. I had, I think I had more paranormal experiences in Mineral Wells than I did anywhere else.
Did people die there?
Yes, I think there were some, you know, suicides. And
wow.
I know over at the Baker Hotel, which is right around the corner from it, there is a famous suicide, someone jumping from the roof there.
They're all over the place. We're going to come back and take phone calls and your stories next.